Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is daf Tazayin. Okay. We are in the middle of Yud Ches Davar. There were gzeiros that were enacted, first debated and finally resolved, that on 18 matters we're going to make various enactments, various gzeiros, mostly having to do with Tumah Tahara. So what we've been doing over the past couple days is we've been going through them. We started because the Mishnah mentioned that this happened in the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Garon. So as a result of that, so we are now immersed in the discussion of the Gemara regarding what the Yud Ches Davar is. We saw a Mishnah in Zavin. The Mishnah in Zavin, fifth parak of Zavin, 12th Mishnah, goes through a good number of them. About half of them. I say about because it's hard to number the Mishnah correctly, accurately. Some of them in the Mishnah we took out. Actually, one of them we took out. But in the meantime, however, the Mishnah in Zavin takes us through about eight of the Yud Ches Davar, and the Mishnah in Zavin is really focused on what would make a person tamei midrabanan, ochlin. Ochel Rishon, Ochlin, Ochel Sheni, meaning, okay, we went through it already at length. On Yud Dal Amud Beis, so we quoted a Braisa. We quoted the Braisa that because we were trying to gain some sort of clarity on who exactly made the Gzera on Yadayim. So, because Yadayim is one of the Yud Ches Davar, and Yadayim is found in the Mishnah in Zavin, so who exactly made the Gzera? So, we were a little bit confused because the Mishnah in Zavin attributes it to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. I mean, really more Beis Shammai. The Braisa on Yadayim and Beis says that it was Shammai and Hillel. So, the Gemara was a little bit confused. The Gemara ends up answering that Shammai and Hillel tried to make the Gzera of Yadayim, but didn't take. And then Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel made the Gzera of Yadayim, and it did take. The Gemara on the bottom of the Amud pointed out that Shlomo also made a Gzera in Yadayim. Shlomo is obviously much earlier than Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, somewhere in the ballpark of 600 years earlier. So the Gemara says that Shlomo made a Gzera of, or the Takana of, washing your hands, the Tilas Yadayim, for the consumption of Kachim, and it was Shammai and Hillel, and subsequently Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, who made the Gzera on Truma as well. Good. Then on Tezvav, yesterday's Daf, what we went through is the first Amud of yesterday's Daf went through the three times that Shammai and Hillel have a machlokas. Meaning Shammai and Hillel, right, the patriarchs themselves, the Rebbeim themselves, only argued on three positions. That's it. And they are how much stodi you need in order to be mafish chala, and how much water, how much collected water added to a mikvah will passel the mikvah, and when a woman's a nida, how far back retroactively is she going to be tameh with tumas nida? On all three of these arguments, the Gemara says the halacha is like neither. The halacha is somewhere in the compromised position, what the Braisa calls the chachamim. Okay, and that was that. And then the Gemara goes back to the Braisa on Yadal Mud Beis, because the Braisa on Yadal Mud Beis mention that Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan made a gzera on Tumas Eretz Ha'amim. So we're going to spend a little bit of time right now going over this Tumas Eretz Ha'amim. Now, simply put, that means that when you walk outside of Eretz Yisrael and you step foot on foreign soil, you become tameh. Plain and simple. And the reason for the enactment we're going to be discussing in just a moment, but that is the gzera of Tumas Eretz Ha'amim. So now the question, again, is one of those technical questions of who made the gzera? When was this gzera enacted? So in the Braisa we just quoted, it's Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi Ish Tzreda. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, Yossi ben Yoezer Ish Tzreda and Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim. Now, we pointed out yesterday, they're the first of the Zugos. So the first of the Zugos puts them early in the Second Temple. So the Gemara points out, I'm on Tezvav Amud Aleph. We did this yesterday. I'm going to do this very quickly right now, or just to get us back and oriented. HaRabbanan Dishmona Shana Gaza. And the Gemara points out, it was a different group of Chachamim. Not to give them any names, but simply saying that they're the group of rabbis that existed 80 years before the destruction of the temple. They're the ones who made the Gzerah of Tumas Ha'amim. The Amr of Rav Kahana Kishchal Rav Yishmael Rav Yossi Shalchulei Rabbi Amor Lanu Beisuk Gemadvarim Shamarta Mishum Avicha. Could you tell us something that was said over in the name of your father Rav Yossi? Shalchlehem Kach Amar Abba Kuf Peishana Ad Shelo Charva Bayis Pashta Malchus Arash Al Yisrael. So now we get a little timeline. 180 years before the destruction of the Second Temple, so we are circa 100 BCE. So that's when the Roman Empire began. Good. Al 80 years before the destruction of the Second Temple, circa 10 BCE. So that's when the group of Chachamim made a gzera on Eretz Ha'amim. And also they made another gzera that glass is subject to becoming Tameh, which is today's daf, and we'll discuss later this morning. 40 years prior to the destruction of the Second Temple, circa 30 CE. So that's when the Sanhedrin left Lishkas Hagazis, went to a place called Chanios, some place in Har Abayis, Lamai Hilchasa, and that movement. What? I'm Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdim, Lama Shalom Danu Dina Kenasos. So the Gemara says the movement that they no longer were able to judge punitive damages. So the Gemara says Dina Kenasos Agadach, Lama Shalom Danu Dina Nefashos. Now that didn't change. The Gemara corrects, and the Gemara says no, they didn't try capital cases anymore. You can only try capital cases when the Sanhedrin is in Lishkas Hagazis. Once the Sanhedrin is dislocated from the Lishkas Hagazis, they can no longer try capital cases. And so the Gemara now suggesting, well, maybe Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, well, maybe they were the group of rabbis who were 80 years prior to the destruction of the temple. What's the big deal? So the Gemara says that's just simply historically inaccurate. It does not, the numbers do not work. So the Gemara says, and the Gemara explains why. In other words, the string of Hillel, followed then by his son Shimon, followed then by his son Gamliel, Rashi points out, I didn't do this yesterday. Rashi points out Gamliel over here is Rabbi Gamliel Zaken. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Gamliel the elder, the original Rabbi Gamliel, if you will. The Shimon, and then Shimon, that's Shimon ben Gamliel, right? So Nagu Nisiyo San Bifnei Abayis Me'ashana. So that string, starting with Hillel, going Hillel to son to son to son, so those four generations of leaders all began 100 years prior to the destruction of the temple. Fine. Now, you understand now, it chronologically simply will not work. The Eli, Yossi ben Yoezer, Yishrei, Yossi ben Yochanan, and Havakad Metuva. Because Hillel was the fifth of the Zugos, and he began 100 years before the Second Temple was destroyed. So obviously, Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, who were four generations earlier, obviously they came well before the 80 years of the destruction of the temple. Ella. Right. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right, and what we're going to have to do is like what we did yesterday, we're going to do the same thing today, we're going to have to suggest that somehow it was a two-stage gzera, meaning that the gzera on Eretz Ha'amim was first enacted by Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan as one stage, and then later on, at this 80-year mark, 80 years before this destruction of the Second Temple, it was the second stage of the gzera. And now what the Gemara is going to just try to reconstruct is, how did the two-step gzera go? So the Gemara says like this. Here's how we're going to first suggest it. Is that Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, when they first made the gzera, they made it on the gush. The gush means the actual ground itself, meaning that you not only have to go outside of the land of Israel, but you have to step on the ground outside the land of Israel in order to contract this tumah. Truma, by the way, when I say this tumah, by the way, the person himself, meaning, again, with all these tumahs are sheni, right? Every tumah that we're talking about is a sheni. So when I say the land is tamei outside of Eretz Yisrael, meaning that the land is given the status of a sheni, so that it will affect truma. The person walking on this land does not become tummy. Right? Rashi, the first Rashi, the second Rashi in the Amun makes this point. Truma hanogas begush ha'afar. So in other words, for truma to become pasul, it actually has to physically touch the land. That is the first gzera that was made by Yossi ben Yorza and Yossi ben Yochanan.
The earth.
The earth. It has to actually touch the earth.
Mitzvah.
Ground. Actual ground. And then, along came the rabbis of 80 years, and Gazer Aavira Litlos. And that once it goes into the airspace, so then it's... Now I'm going to be careful about how I say this. Not tame, but not tame. Right, I hope that was confusing as mud. Okay, in other words, Litlos. Meaning that any truma that goes into the airspace of foreign land, so... right, suspended in the air over the foreign land, is going to be limbo. Okay, so lamemra dechad exerta hava lesreifa. So the Gemara says, okay, but it can't be. Why? Why can't that be? The hamar ilfa, because we're going to go to a statement that we saw already yesterday. We're going to review today. Yadayim tchilas gzeras al lesreifa, because when it came to the gzer of yadayim, meaning there are 18 gzeras altogether. But Yadayim is unique. What's unique about Yadayim is that when they originally enacted Yadayim, it was L'Sreifa. Meaning that when the rabbi said that hands that come into contact with Truma is going to passel the Truma, that was that Truma now will be Tame, or passel. The Truma will have to be burnt. That's the only Gzera D'Rabbanan where the original Gzera was for Sreifa. So Yadayim Udat Tchilas Gzeres on the Sreifa Hamid Yachrin Alo. And that means that all the other Gzeres that were enacted are not going to affect Sreifa, but rather just limbo, litlos. So what you can't suggest, in other words, now that you've said that, so now go back to the answer that the Gemara proposed. The proposed answer of the Gemara was, is that the original Gzera of Yossi ben Yochanan and Yossi ben Yoezer is that when Truma goes outside of the land of Israel and touches the ground of Israel, it touches the foreign land, you're going to burn it. But that was only the only Gzera where the immediate Gzera was, where the Gzera was to burn Truma, was only by Yadayim and by none of the other Gzeras. Ella, so the Gemara says, okay. So with that in mind, we're just now going to reconstruct. Here's how it must have been. So okay, good. So it's going to be basically very similar to what we just suggested, but with one tweaking. They didn't burn the Truma. When the Truma went outside of Eretz Yisrael, it touched the land outside of Eretz Yisrael, so now that Truma's in limbo. It's not Tame, it's not Natame, Tola.
What do you do with it?
And what do you do with it? You let it rot. Leave it and let it rot. And then the avira, the airspace below klum, nothing. Meaning Gzera didn't touch it at all. The asur abundant to peishan agazur agusha lisrof avir litlos. And so, what did the later Gzera accomplish? They upped the ante on the gush, on the land outside of Eretz Yisrael. So now it's sreifa on the airspace. Now we're tola. Okay, so far so good. It sounds like we got it. The Gemara is going to do one more tweaking. The Akati Beusha Gazor. So the Gemara says, is that accurate? Did none. And now, the enactment over the land was accomplished in Usha. Now, first of all, Usha, what's Usha? Usha is a town. Don't ask me geographically, I can't help you in terms of that. But we do know, at least I do know, that Usha was one of the places that the Sanhedrin was exiled. Sanhedrin went 10 stops after the destruction of the Second Temple, eventually ending up in the town of Yavne. Sipori. Right, correct. Yeah, right, Yavne was a stop on the way. But eventually went to Sipori. So we do know that they went into exile, and one of the stops was the town of Usha, right? And Usha, they made a number of takanas. The most popular one, can I say that? I don't know about that. A famous one is that in Usha, they instituted that if a person's going to give away his money, don't give more than 20% of your money away, right? One of the takanas of Usha that they had to institute. Okay, so in Usha, the Institute of the following did not, we learned in the Mishnah, Alvav Sveikos Sorfen is a Truma. For over 6 Sveikos, so you're going to burn Truma. Meaning, Sveikos over here means that because we're not sure, So therefore, the rabbis enacted, you're going to burn the Chumah. Al Safik Beis HaPras, meaning, let's say, for example, the Chumah went over the Beis HaPras, meaning, not that it's a Safik, that whether or not it went over the Beis HaPras, but because Beis HaPras is a Safik, so now when the Chumah goes over it, so we're going to burn it. Al Safik Alfer Haba Me'er Ta'amim, and land that was imported from outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Al Safik Big Dam Ha'aretz, the Al Safik Kalim, Hanimsim, and the clothing worn by an Am Ha'aretz. We don't know if the Am Ha'aretz is careful about his Tumah Tahara, and so therefore all of his clothing may or may not be Tameh. So therefore, if Truma comes into contact with his clothing, burn the truma, al safik kalim and imsaim, and also with their kalim as well, al safik harokin, and also their spit, which again, the amarats may or may not be azov, we don't know. And so therefore, the spit may or may not be tummy, we don't know. If truma comes into contact, then we're going to burn it. Al safik may regle adam as well as their urine, because urine and spit are mayanot, they are secretions of the zav, which means that if, in fact, the Amarats was a Zav, so the secretions are going to be an Avatuma. We talked about that just yesterday. Shechaneged Mei Regle Behema. So, Avadai Magan Safik Tuma San Storfenes Truma. So, if there was definite contact, and it's possible that's Tamei, so therefore, Storfenes Truma, you're going to be Storfenes Truma. And Rav Yossi Omer, Afal Safik Magan Rishos Yachid Storfen. Now, Reb Yossi says that if there was a possible contact in a Rishus HaYachid, you would burn it, like the classic rule of called Safik Tumah B'Rishus HaYachid, Sfeiko Tamei, the Chachamim Omer B'Rishus HaYachid, Tolem B'Rishus HaRabim Torim, and the Chachamim so say no, that in a Rishus HaYachid we're Tolem, meaning it's in limbo, and if it were in a Rishus HaRabim, it'd be Tahor. The Amar Ula, now, I go through all this quickly, to get to the point of Ula, which is Elova Sfekos Beushet Kinu. When did all this occur? In the town of Usha. Okay, so now, what basically we've done now is we've changed the number. The number was 2, now the magic number is 3. Why is the number 3? Because now you can plot on the timeline, there were 3 points historically where the Chachamim enacted a Gzera regarding Eretz Ha'amim. Number 1 is during the first Zugos of Yossi ben Yoaz and Yossi ben Yochanan. Number 2 is 80 years prior to the destruction of the Bayis Sheni. And number 3 now is in the town of Usha, which was after the destruction of the Second Temple. So now that we've plotted 3 points, so now we have to simply explain what was the Gzera during these 3 points. And so the Gemara says, okay, so let's do it. Ela asuinu gazra agusha litlos ravir v'lo klom. Good. So now, Takana number 1, this is Yossi ben Yochanan, Yossi ben Yoezer, is that outside of Eretz Yisrael, only if the Truma touches the land. And even then, it's only to put the Truma in a state of limbo. As far as the airspace is concerned, nothing. And then what the 80 years prior to the destruction, the Bayis Sheni, both are Tola. Both the land and the airspace are going to be Tola. So they added the airspace, but they didn't adjust or change the land. And then in the town of Usha, what they did is they made a gzera that on the land you're going to be Saref, and on the airspace that is left untouched. Good. All right, I know that, you know, that was a very technical discussion, but basically now the Gemara has resolved when and what, right, the timeline, when and what was Gzera of Eretz Ha'amim. Okay. All right, let's go on. All right, well, fine. As, in other words, left as is. Kedekai, as it stands, kai.
It's like, it stands. So it's not
Sarif,
so it's...
just right. Oh, airspace, limbo. Truma in the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, limbo.
Limbo. So you just leave it wrong.
Leave it. Wrong. Let it go. Kli zechuch is my time agazer bei Rabbanan Tuma. Okay, and now we're up to glass. Now let's understand. The Torah tells us that Kalim become Tameh, but the Torah also tells us what type of Kalim. So the Torah speaks about metal Kalim, the Torah speaks about Kli Cheres, earthenware, and the Torah speaks about wood. Okay? The Torah also speaks about...
Do they have glass?
Yeah. Sure. And the Torah also talks about The Torah talks about clothing becoming susceptible to tumah, but in terms of kelim, you're basically talking about metals, wood, and glass. Okay, I'm sorry, metals, wood, and earthenware. Okay, and that's it. So in other words, any other material that could be used to make kelim, it's not that the Torah doesn't recognize them. Of course, the Torah does. It's just simply not mekabel tumah. There's not going to be any tumah. Stone, right? You make something out of stone, natural stone. Not mekabel tumah. Okay, and we're not talking about kashrus right now. I hope we all understand. We're talking about tumah. So it's not mekabel tumah.
Tin and all kind of alloys.
Those are metals. In other words, metals are not limited to any particular type of metal. Okay. You talk about, I know this is going to sound strange, but it's coming up in today's daf. You make a kli out of animal dung. It was done back in the good old days. I'm sure you don't want to announce that at the dinner table. I don't want to make dinner conversation about it, but okay, it was done. So not mekabel tumah. Okay, so certain materials are simply not mekabel tumah. The Torah only speaks of three materials.
Leather.
If it's made into clothing.
They make a
pouch.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't know. Okay. That's a good question. All right. So now basically what we're going to learn together is that one of the takanos that was made, and we know who did it, right? We learned that in yesterday's daf. That was Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach made. I'm sorry. I take it back. I'll say it again. Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. Okay. Of course, because we were just been talking about the Tumas Eretz Amim, and the other gzera that they made was Kli Zechuchis of glass, and basically they said the glass is going to be Mekabel Tumah. Okay. Now here's fine. So Kli Zechuchis my Tumah Gazer by Rabbanan Tumah. So the question is why Amar of Yochanan Amar Shlakish. Now by the way, that's strange. Amar Rav Yochanan, Amar Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says, in the name of Reish Lakish. Other way, right, flip.
No, but
Reish Lakish learned by Rav Yochanan.
Okay, right. Yeah,
so just the attribution of Amar Rav Yochanan, Amar Reish Lakish, right, that's a little bit strange. I see on the side of the Gemara, some take out the words Rav Yochanan and just leave it as Reish Lakish. I understand that correction. Either way, Let's deal with the main point. Hol utchilas briyasan minachol shavi rabbanan kikli cheres. So here's the Gemara's first explanation. It's an interesting one. Glass is made out of sand. So basically, it behaves. Well, it doesn't behave. I take that back. It does. In fact, we're going to talk about how it behaves. But in other words, since its production. Its composition is much like kli cheres, so therefore, when the rabbis looked at glass, they said, "You know what? It's going to be mekabel tumah." And since its composition, just like kli cheres, is earthenware, it's pottery, and so glass is kind of made of the same material. So therefore, we're going to treat it like kli cheres. This is Reish Lakish's explanation. Meaning, let me make sure if I can be clear about this. Glass is mekabel tumah. That's a given. Meaning, and that's Gzeirah d'Rabbanan. The rabbis enacted that glass was mekabel tumah. The only question is going to be why, but that's an important question because we're going to learn together over the course of today that various materials have different rules and regulations about how they're mekabel tumah, outside versus inside, whether or not they can go into a mikvah, meaning various materials have different rules about tumah. So when we say that glass is mekabel tumah, we want to know, in what category are we going to put it in? So Reish Lakish's argument is, well, put in Kli Cheres. Why? Kli Cheres is made from the ground. Glass is made from the ground. Good. Now, by the way, metal is also made from the ground, meaning it's a mineral that comes from the ground as well. But, okay.
It's not dirt. It was never dirt.
Right. We're talking here about dirt and sand. They're very similar to one another. So the Gemara says, interesting. Shavin Rabban Kli Cheres Elamiata Lo Tehelahen Tara BeMikvah. If you're right, so then that means that you can't take glass if it becomes tameh and put it in the mikvah, right? Because Kli Cheres, we know, can't go in the mikvah. There is no tahara of Kli Cheres in a mikvah. What do you do with Kli Cheres? You break it. It's that simple. Okay. Alamatanan, but we learned in a Mishnah in Mikvaos, the Elochotis in Bekalin. These will be a chatzitza for Kalim. Hazefis vahamor, Beklizachuchis. That if I got pitch or tar stuck to glass, so then that would represent a chatzitza for glass. That is the Mishnah in Mikvaos. Now the Mishnah Mikvaos is making already a leap of assumption, which is, you're taking glass and you're putting it in the mikvah. And the only discussion the Mishnah is having over there is what is and what isn't a chatzitza. But it's clear from that Mishnah that we're toveling glass in the Mishnah, in the mikvah. No. That tumah is only as far as no. That Mishnah is just talking about chatzitza. That's all. But in other words, what the Mishnah there is assuming is that you could tell from the glass.
If it's tummy,
right.
Then it doesn't work.
Right. Correct.
Then it works.
So Hachem Ma'askinik Kegon Shenikva Vehitiv LaSochan Ever. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you what. That Mishnah in Mikvos, I know that Mishnah in Mikvos is talking about Tovin glass in the Mikvah. But I will say like this. That Mishnah is talking about a very specific case. The glass has a hole in it. And it was fixed by a craftsman. And what he did is as follows. He melted some lead into that hole. So in other words, this utensil is primarily glass with a little bit of metal melted into that hole. And so now I ask you a simple question. What is it? It's a very simple question. What is that utensil? Is it glass or is it metal? Well, most of its composition is glass. So I would say that it's glass. Now what we're going to do in terms of understanding that Mishnah Mikvaos is we're going to add one point, which is Rav Meirhi. That Mishnah Mikvaos is following like the opinion of Rav Meir, that because the glass is held together, and literally mamid means supported, by that little amount of lead filling up the hole, meaning to me that glass would be useless without the metal. So hakol holechacha amamid. When I talk about defining a utensil, even though the majority of its composition may be glass, but since the lead is holding it together, so therefore, you know what I'm calling it? I'm calling it metal. Detanya klizachuch shenikva v'itil fatochen ever. Am Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Meir matamid v'chacham mematarin. Rav Meir says that it's subject to tumah. And the Chachamim say that it's Tahor. So, Ela Me'ata Lo Li. Okay, fine. So, in other words, so basically now like this. We're still defending Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that glass is primarily a Kli Cheres. The Gemara's question is, if you're right, then why don't we tov on the Mikvah? And the Mishnah and Mikvah says that we do tov on the Mikvah. So the Gemara says, leave the Mishnah and Mikvahs out of the discussion. The Mishnah and Mikvahs is talking about a special case where there was a hole in it. I filled the hole with lead. And that Mishnah and Mikvahs falls like Rav Meir, who holds that you follow the Mamid in terms of defining a Kli. But in general, if you have glass is Kli Cheres. Okay. The Gemara now on top of Tet Zayin and Aleph, today's Daf, Lo Li Tamu Mi Gaban. So if you are right, and glass is Kli Cheres, so then it shouldn't become tummy from the outside. Okay, here we've gone over this many times before, but you need to know that when it comes to Kli Cheres is only mitami from the inside, not from the outside. If this styrofoam cup were Kli Cheres, it's not. But if it were, so the only way the Kli can become tummy is only if something goes into the inner, to the inside of the Kli Cheres, not from the outside. And as Aaron points out correctly, Rashi right over here points it out as well. you got good company. It doesn't even need to touch the Kli Cheres. Meaning the way the Kli Cheres operates in terms of communication of Tumah, only if the Kli Cheres goes into the inside of the airspace of it, it's going to communicate the Tumah to the Kli Cheres. And by the way, Rashi also points out over here, in terms of communicating from the Kli Cheres to any food that is in the Kli Cheres, same story. Meaning that as long as it goes into the airspace, it becomes Tameh. So for example, just to illustrate this point, if let's say all I did is hang a dead sheretz from a string and put it into the airspace of the Kli Cheres, so now the Kli Cheres is Tameh. Fine. The whole Kli Cheres now is Tameh. Good. And now, let's say I fill the kli cheres with mustard seeds. I'm just using Rashi's example. I know it sounds like I'm strange, but... And then I fill the whole kli cheres with mustard seeds. Okay? Which means then that some of those mustard seeds are not actually touching the kli cheres. They're all going to become tameh. All of them. Meaning even the ones in the middle. Okay, right. Why? Because kli cheres can both receives tumah and transmits tumah just simply through its airspace. Good. So the Gemara's question now is a very simple one. If you're telling me, like Reish Lakish is telling me, that glass is tameh and the tumah derabanan is because, just like kli cheres is composed of earth, so too is glass composed of earth. So therefore, it should only contract tumah only through its airspace and not from the outside. Kli cheres kli neser tumas and shava mitam in. This is a Mishnah in Kalim. So mitam in. Umitam in me'avi rehen, umitam in me'acho rehen, ve'ein mitam in migabehen. The Mishnah in Kalim says that when you have kli cheres or kli neser is also another type of earthenware, just made up of white earth as opposed to brown earth, but it's both earthenware. So they become tamei from the inside. From the airspace. By the way, when it says me'acho rehen, I got a little bit confused. Meaning that doesn't mean from the outside. Acho rehen means that if there's another interior space, meaning but the interior space happens not to be from the top, but let's say it's on the bottom. Meaning if you're like, let's say, creating a base, and so and that base has an interior space, that's also going to convey tumah. So that now if I take a sheretz and I put it into the interior space of the bottom half, it's also going to convey tumah. But miga bam, but I could take the sheretz all day long and just simply touch it to the outside of the kli cheres, it's not going to convey, it's not going to receive tumah. So me'acharim ve'im tamei gamim u'shvirasan mitarasan. And by the way, one last point: how you mitar it, you break it.
Then it is tara.
Yeah.
The pieces are tara.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Now. What's the problem? The problem is very simple. The Mishnah Kalim only refers to two types of Kalim.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It only refers to Kli Cheres and Kli Neser. And the Gemara just makes, it's a simple diuk. Kli Neser, Kli Cheres, who did Tumas and Shava, Avamida Achrin Alo. Meaning when the Mishnah Kalim was going to give us a long list of Kalim that behave in this manner, and if Reish Lakish were right, wouldn't the Mishnah Kalim want to include glass as well? If in fact glass behaves the same way that Kli Cheres does?
But if you classify glass as earthenware, you don't have to. It's earthenware.
I understand that, but the Mishnah Kalim, what would have been the big deal for the Mishnah Kalim to have added glass to the list?
It says Nasser.
Right, but right. And Aaron's also right, by the way. It does say Kli Neser. Okay.
It didn't say Kli Neser, you might be wrong.
Oh. Okay. So the Gemara now is going to do somewhat of an about face. Kaven dechinishtabru, yeshlem takana, shavina kakli matachos. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, so abandon ship, and now we're going to try the following. We're trying to classify glass. Meaning, again, we start off with the point that the chachamim were goes their tumma on glass. And the question is, why? Meaning, what did they compare it to in order to establish this tumma? So at first, we've now been spending nearly half an amud of Gemara trying to suggest that it's like kli cheres. So now the Gemara says, well, maybe not. Maybe it's like metal. Why is it like metal? Because if glass breaks, you can melt the glass and you can recreate it. So just like metal, meaning if metal breaks, what you could do is you could melt it down and then you can make it over again. By kli cheres, you don't melt kli cheres down, meaning the only thing you do is you just break it and that's it. And so because it is in that regard, meaning, so now we're not looking at composition. We're looking at behavior. It behaves like metal, so therefore the Chachamim regozer it like metal.
It's a rabbinic.
Right, in other words, correct, but the Chachamim chose to compare to metal. Elamiyata yachzul tumas and yishana, kechli matachos, the Gemara says, ditnan. How about this? If you are right, and that glass is like metal, so then we should have something called tumi yishana. Now what's tumi yishana? Tumi yishana is basically like this. Look. Anytime you break a kli, the tumah goes away. That's true by earthenware. It's also true by metal as well. Meaning, A kli is tame for one simple reason. Because it's a kli. It has utility, it has function. But once it no longer has utility and function, so therefore it is it's not a kli anymore. And the tumah goes away. However, what the Chachamim mandated is the following. That if I have metal, which was a kli, and it was tame, and it broke and I fixed it, you know what happens to the tumah? The tumah comes back. Now, I'll give away a punchline, right? I'm going to...
Right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. That's not... No, don't apologize. That's not min Torah, meaning once you break it and once it's a clear, the tumah goes away. Tumah doesn't make a rebound, but what the Chachamim did is that they made a gzera that when you fix the kli matachos, when you fix the metal kli, the tumah comes back. Why did they make that gzera? Stay tuned, we'll discuss that later this morning. But they did. So the Gemara says, "Kli matchos pshutem amekablem etam nishbu tar chazav asam ein kelim." If I fix it again, chazul the tumas and yishana, it goes back to its old tumah. The tumah comes back. The ilu kabe kli zchuches tana. Now I'll show you another mishnah in kelim. We are heavy in kelim today. I'll show you another mishnah in kelim. We learned in the mishnah kli etu kli or kli etu kli zchuches that if I have wood or leather. Or bone, by the way, leather. Yeah. All right, ukli atzim, ukli zchuchis in glass. Pshutim tarim. So first of all, if it's pshutim, meaning it's a simple utensil. By simple, we mean it does not have a toch, does not have an interior. Flat. Like it's flat. It's a knife. It's, I guess, a fork also. Pshutim tarim. Umekableim tameim. Nishbaru. If they break taru, chazavasam and kelim, mikablam tumim, mikanulaba. The mission, kelim says that regarding these kelim of glass, leather, bone, and wood, if they break and I fix it, the tumah doesn't come back. Okay? So, obviously now you understand what the problem is. Mikanulaba in lamafrelo. The problem is very simple. If now what you're suggesting is that glass was, the chachamim were gozer, or tumah on glass, because it behaves like metal, and just like metal can be melted and remodeled, so too can glass be melted and remodeled. And that's why the rabbis made the gzera. So we know by that, by metal, it's tumah yishana, that if I break and melt it down and make it again, the tumah comes back. So the same thing should be true by glass. And meanwhile, we know it's not. The Mishnah in Kelim tells us it's not. And that's going to be the Gemara's answer. Kli zechuch is derabanan, v'tumah yishana derabanan. Look, kli zechuch is tameh because of gzera derabanan. Tumah yishana works because of gzera derabanan. V'tumah daraisa achisa be rabanan tumah. V'tumah derabanan lo achisa le rabanan tumah. Plain and simple. No double gzera. To say that glass now is going to experience tumah yishana, that would be a compound gzera, and that we don't do. Wonderful. Pshuteim mia litame. Da pshute klimatchos da raisa ninu. So now the Gemara says, how about this? Here's a simple question, which, by the way, we could have asked earlier. I just ignored it. But now we can ask a very simple question. So glass is metal, right? The chachamim were goes to glass because it's like metal. Now by metal kalim to become tamei could be true whether it is simple, right? It's simple and flat, or if it has a toch. And so now, to ask a very simple question, if that's true by metal, it should be true by glass as well. Meanwhile, did you notice the Mishnah Kalim that we read earlier? The Mishnah Kalim that we read earlier, the middle of the Amud, I'm going to read the Mishnah again. Kli etu kli or kli etzem kli zechuchis, pshutehem tahorin, umekable and tameim. That pshute kli zechuchis. Simple glass. I guess you made a glass knife, a glass tray. That's better. That's much better. Okay? Glass challah board. Okay? We go through this thing so quickly in our house, it's unbelievable. No, it has a glass top. And then we drop it and we break it. And we do it with regularity. Okay. Anyway, so the Mishnah Kalim says it's not Mikabel Tumah because it's Pshutim. Okay, so the Gemara says, so now what? Meaning, so you're telling me that glass is like metal, and the reason why the Chachamim made the Gzeirin glass was because it behaves like metal. We know that by metal, metal is mekabel tuma, whether it's pashut or it has a toch. So the same thing should be true by glass as well. Okay, so that's a very straightforward question, and the Gemara gives an interesting answer. So avde b'hu rabbanan hekera. So the Gemara says, well, the rabbis do this. And what the Chachamim do is that even when they make a gzera, the Chachamim put, like, encrypt a little message in the gzera, itself, so that people know that this is a Tumah D'Rabbanan, not a Tumah D'Araisa. Okay? And by encrypting such a message into the gzera, so that now we know, if Truma comes into contact with a glass kli that's Tameh, so now we remind ourselves, well, right, do I burn the Truma? Because I know that Truma becomes Tameh, I need to burn the Truma. So I don't burn the Truma over here, wait a second. Glass is only Tameh if it has a toch. Glass is not Tameh if it's flat. Why? Oh yeah, that's right. The Chachamim did that to remind us that this Tumah is only Tumah D'Rabbanan, and of course we wouldn't burn Truma if it only becomes Tumah with Tumah D'Rabbanan. By the way, let's remember what we learned earlier this morning, with one exception, Yadayim. Meaning Yadayim is that exception. Now, in other words, you really, as you go through this again and again, you start to process. Meaning Yadayim is, why is it the exception? I don't know. I don't have a good explanation in terms of why. But Yadayim is the exception where, there the Gzera was, is that the moment the Truma comes into contact with the Yadayim, you burn it. But in other words, the general position is that if it's just Tuma D'Rabbanan, so the Truma that comes into contact with it is not Tame, not Tame, it's in a state of limbo. Well, I mean, if it's a tray, so then, I mean, yeah, you're right. The tray may have a rim around it. We should learn Mishnayos Kalim, by the way. I feel like the Mishnayos over there will discuss that in detail. Okay. By the way, Rashi also points out over here, there are other exceptions to the rule as well. In fact, go back to the previous Amud, and you'll note the six Sfeikos, where they too are exceptional, meaning that even though it's Tumah D'Rabbanan, they are going to get, the Truma is going to get burnt. So, Yadayim isn't the only exception. There are others as well. Okay. Good. Top of the next Amud. Tezayin Amud Beis. Rav Ashi Amar La'olam L'Kli Charis Damu. Rav Ashi says, I'd like to resurrect Reish Lakish. Okay? Tchiyas Sameisim. Meaning that we have now, we know that glass is Mekabel Tuma. And we also know that that was instituted by Yossi ben Yoazer and Yossi ben Yochanan. And we also know that, but what we don't know is, why did they make such a Gzera? Meaning, on the grounds of, what does glass look like? Or what is it? What is it similar to? So we basically have two options on the table. It's either similar to metal, or it's similar to kli charis earthenware. Now the reason why we liked the metal is because, right, in other words, it behaves like metal. If it breaks, just like I can melt metal down and make it again, so too we could do that with glass, we can melt it down and make it again. And that's why we did like its comparison to metal. We also liked it because kli zechuchis is tummy from the inside and it's tummy from the outside. And if you went with the kli charis comparison, so we got stuck. Right. Because kli charis is only tummy from the inside, not from the outside. And glass, as we know, the Mishnah Kalim teaches us, is tummy both from the inside and from the outside. So therefore we opted with the metal comparison. Although we kind of missed a little bit, even in the metal comparison. Well, why isn't it tummy when it's pshute kli zechuchis? And to that, the Gemara proposed an answer. Well, the Chachamim did that to make a little, right, to make a little sign, a siman for us, that this is Tumah D'Rabbanan and not Tumah D'Araisa. Okay. Rav Ashi says, I'd like to go all the way back to Reish Lakish. And I'd like to propose back to Reish Lakish that he's right. That glass is tummy because of its similarity to kli charis. It's made from the dirt. Glass is made from the sand. Now, what's the problem? The Gemara gives over here an ingenious explanation. So the Gemara says, well, when it comes to glass, there's no real outside to glass. Glass is transparent. So therefore, when I look at glass from the outside, basically the outside is the inside. I'm not really sure how to correctly say this, but I do understand and hopefully can communicate to some degree the idea of what the Gemara is suggesting. Is that because glass is transparent, because I can see glass all the way through, so therefore it is like Kli Cheres, and therefore Kli Cheres is only tummy from Toch and not from the outside, but because of the transparency of the glass, the outside is the inside. And so therefore, when I have Tuma touching the outside, it's ki'ilu, it's like it's touching the inside because of glass's transparency.
Right,
right, right.
If you have color glass, when you say look, look.
Huh?
If you have color glass, you can see the inside.
Yeah. Now, I'll end today's daf with the following point. In other words, we have more to do, I understand, but we'll end today's daf with the following point. It comes out now that according to Rav Ashi and according to Reish Lakish, so now basically I look at glass, and I understand that glass now is tamei midrabanan, and so to the question of what laws of tuma is it going to behave like, or what is it going to be? So according to Reish Lakish and according to Rav Ashi, it's going to be like Kli Cheres. Okay, wonderful. I'm going to ask you a simple question then. According to Rav Ashi and according to Reish Lakish, I buy glass from the store. Do I need to tovel in the mikvah? Now, toveling in the mikvah, please understand, we're not talking about kashrus right now. We're talking about the mitzvah of taking an item that you purchased from a non-Jew and toveling in the mikvah. Great, so do I tovel in the mikvah? Well, Kli Cheres. If I purchase Kli Cheres from a non-Jew, do I need to tovel that in the mikvah? The answer is absolutely not. If I purchase metal from a non-Jew, do I need to tovel in the mikvah? The answer is absolutely yes. So do I tovel glass in the mikvah? Well, it sounds like from a Rav Ashi and Reish Lakish, the answer would be no. That's what it sounds like. So the last point I'm going to make today is Tosfos. Tosfos is over here on the top of, the top Tosfos on the Amud. So Tosfos makes the following argument. Okay, so in other words, first thing Tosfos points out, obviously, is that Rav Ashi doesn't believe that glass is like metal, meaning he doesn't subscribe to that argument. Mihu le'inyan lahatzrichan tvila kishen chadashin islay l'Rav Ashi haytayma beheja beperek basra de Maseches Avodah Zarah. We go to the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah, really the end, Ayin Hamad Beis, and the Gemara over there says that according to Rav Ashi, if you buy glass from a non-Jew, you have to tovel in the mikvah. So in other words, we're going to get confused by Rav Ashi. Meaning Rav Ashi, when he looks at glass is really a composite. Meaning that in the world of Tuma Tahara, I treat it like Kli Cheres, but in the world of toveling it in the mikvah, so that when I buy it from a non-Jew, so it's gonna have a metal quality to it.
Because it's a
safek. No, it's not a safek, it's a takana. It's a rabbinic enactment. So that's not a suffix. Yeah, the answer is you do make a bracha. Now really it's strange because basically now we have Rav Ashi who is kind of like a blended position. Glass is like metal. Glass is like Kli Cheres. Okay, we'll stop over here.